Hello and welcome to episode 516 of Ferg on the Brick. I'm that bloke from Rugby League Project, Andrew Ferguson. You can find me on Twitter at AndrewRLP. And join me as always is the glorious League Freak. You can also find our Twitter at League Freak. How are you going there, mate?
I'm going very well, Andrew. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. It's interesting coming out of a weekend and not being filled with rage. I'm just mellow.
Yeah, look, welcome to my world. It's pretty cool to be able to win a footy game. How good has the NRL been this year so far? It's been, like, really exciting, all the games. There's been a couple of duds, but you're going to get that. But for the most part, we've seen some really interesting things happen.
Yeah, and some surprising things. As much, you know, we can talk about the fact that West Tigers have won one of their first two games of the year. But to me, the biggest surprise is how much utter garbage South Sydney are turning out at the moment.
Yeah, that they look, they're in a bad place. And, like, you kind of expected them. I wrote about them this week, how it's maybe it's time for them to rebuild rather than retool, basically, and how some of their key players are, you know, they're the wrong side of 30. And that doesn't mean that they're not playing well, but at some point you do have to start to look towards the future. And, you know, I think maybe that these results that they're getting early in the season, that it's one of the things that is a warning sign for them that if they continue down the pathway where they feel as though they're a contender, it's just going to get worse for them. And so it might be time to maybe move some players into different positions and start to look towards the future. I think it all revolves around Lachlan Ilias as well. Like, he needs to be the one running that team, and they need to turn the keys over to him. And yeah. I think until they do that, they're just going to get worse, because some of their key players are going to eventually retire, and then what do you do? Like, you've got to hand the keys over to someone.
Well, the crazy thing I noticed in that game against the Roosters on the weekend is they're almost largely parking Cody Walker on the right-hand side when all of the great stuff he's ever done in his career has been on the left.
Mm-hmm.
So now they've not only taken their best attacking weapon away, but they've also put him out of position, and they've also ruined the whole left-edge attack, and it's done nothing to help their right-edge attack.
Yeah.
Which they've completely botched everything. Then their defense in the middle is just, it's just pedestrian.
Yeah. And look, their forwards were never a feature of them, even when they were really good. Their forwards kind of got a job done. They'd have a good game here or there, but they weren't built around a great forward pack. And I think that with the way they're playing right now, I mean, teams are running through the middle of them. So their forwards are not as good as even they used to be. I think the warning sign was when they went out and they paid big money for Jack White to play in the centres. Like, that money should have been allocated in a different area for the South Sydney Rabbitohs. You know, it's, and they look terrible. Like, the body language is bad. They look like they've got a pack which is maybe a bit old-fashioned for the type of footy we're seeing the best teams play at the moment.
I'm wondering if Jason Demetriou actually has a legit game plan. I guess the Roosters, he had Havili, who just doesn't have the fitness of Damien Cook. We had him starting at hooker.
Mm.
Only for the first 10 minutes. And then Cook come on anyway. It's like, that kind of defeats the purpose of a Cook on the bench if he's only going to miss the first 10. Like, what's the point of that?
And the other
basically
thing is,
just burnt a rotation on your bench.
Exactly. And like, that might have made sense if they were looking at it defensively. But by the time Cook come on, they were down by 12 points or something like that. So, yeah. And that just goes out the window. So, yeah, it that seems silly. I also wonder about, you know, Latrell Mitchell, whether it's time for him to move into the centres. I know, like, I just think that maybe that'll help his career. I think it'll be better for Souths. And they can look at getting a fullback, which, and I wrote about this, like, there's no one built like Latrell Mitchell as a fullback. He's a giant dude. He's carrying around a lot of weight. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. He's just a giant man, you know. And when you line him up against every other fullback in the game, they're all built like sort of long distance runners, every other fullback, except Latrell Mitchell, who's a giant, you know. And it might just be time for him to go into the centres and they look for a different direction, because they need a different direction, because what they're doing right now is not working.
Yeah, it's really weird watching Latrell, because that first half he was barely seen, and he wasn't going to any great lengths to try and get himself involved in the game. He put in a lot more effort in the second half, but still wasn't on the ball anywhere near enough. It just seems weird. You've got a great attacking weapon like that at fullback, and you're not injecting him into the game at all. Whereas Tedesco looked at me and Bucks in the second half. So they still find a way to get Tedesco to get involved and inject himself in a very positive way to the attack.
Mm.
But they can't get Latrell doing that. And to me, it's starting to sound a bit more like there's an issue with the coach and the game plan more than anything else, because how can you not get someone like Latrell Mitchell involved in your game plans and attack? That just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and look, when you're seeing him get the ball, he's really kind of using himself as a battering ram, and he's better than that. You know, he's way better than that. So I just think that maybe they've got a few changes to make, and yeah, I think that this is it's maybe time for South. They've had a really, really, really good run. You know, they made the preliminary finals or the grand final for 5 straight years, and that's half a decade of getting to the second last week of the season. Eventually, it's all going to kind of end, and I think that maybe this is a chance, because even if you get rid of some of the older players out of that South team, you've still got a pretty good core of young dudes that are very experienced for their age. So I don't think their rebuild would be as long as most other teams would be, but I think they have to commit to that, because yeah, what they're doing right now just isn't working.
Yes. And on the flip side, we'll talk about the Roosters. Sam Walker looked very good in that first half and then come off with a head knock. But he looked like he was, I mean, this doesn't mean anything, but it looked like he was okay. And you got the impression when he's coming off the field that he's probably going to come back on. And then they went, category one, mate, you're gone. But was it Sandon Smith, the 5'8"? I think that's his name. He just took over the game in the second half as soon as Walker went off. Because I thought that was going to be the time, because Walker was playing so well and controlling the game for the Roosters so well. He came off and there was about a 5-minute period there where it looked like South was starting to get back into the match. I went, oh, here we go. Mm. And the Smith just took the game back and took it to the next level, and they just didn't stop scoring, but didn't stop piling the points on against the Bunnies as well.
Yeah,
I will say this too. Souths are one of the worst 4 teams for win percentages over the last 16 games.
Wow, that's interesting.
They've won the same number of games in the last 16 as the Bulldogs and the Dragons, and that's 4, and they're only 1 win ahead of the Tigers on 3.
That's terrible. That's really terrible.
That's where they're at.
Yeah. It's ending quickly for them. I look at someone like a Cody Walker, and like as an individual, his football hasn't really lost anything. But he's not really adding to what his team is doing, which is kind of weird. And, you know, he's never got that combination with Ilias going at all. And we commented on that from day one to now, you know.
Mm.
And that's why I think they need to make some changes. And they're going to be difficult changes to make. You know, there's going to be really good players that have done things at that club that they need to move on. But it has to happen. As I wrote on my article this week, even Clive Churchill had to retire one day. So it happens to every single one of them. But yeah, it's, man, they just look terrible. They look really, really bad.
They really do. And this week they're playing the Bulldogs.
Well, if they lose to the Bulldogs, like, Demetrio's job is really on the line very quickly. And we talked, in the pre-season podcast we did, I said I think this will be Demetrio's last season as South's coach. It might happen quicker. I don't know who they'd bring in, whether they'd just, you know, make a big money play for Wayne Bennett or something like that. But Yeah, it could end quicker than the end of the year.
This is very true. In other news, West Tigers won, but Leichhardt Oval, that's the big news. Because the West Tigers won, we can't talk about that. So we've got to talk about Leichhardt Oval.
Yeah. Can we talk? Can we mention every single fucking stand and hot dog stand and fucking toilet block? Yeah, I know. They made it sound like it was a super stadium on Fox Sports. Well, they're like, this stand and that stand and that stand. And I'm thinking to myself, like, well, one of them's condemned, you know?
Yes. I think that's the Norm Latcham Robinson stand has been condemned for over a decade because of White Ants.
Yeah.
I think part of this massive whinging and sooking by journos is spearheaded by Buzz Rothfield. This is my opinion. And it's because he wants to find a way to talk about something that's older than him and also whinge about something. And he's probably got a bit of a pain in the ass because, you know, essentially a hill in Lilyfield can have more people sitting in it than the actual Donald Shark Stadium can currently hold. That's where the grief currently is.
That's a good point. I guess if you can find a reason to save Leichhardt Oval, then you can't get rid of Shark Park, can you? Like, it's a strange one. Like you and me have talked about Leichhardt Oval a million times over, and like it's, I mean, you don't. There's a reason why we have museums, but you don't play football games at museums. I thought that Warren Smith made a really good point on Twitter, and he got smashed for it. But he said that, like, if you have a look at the people that are in the crowd on the hill, the one thing you don't see is older people or children, because it's a very specific group of people that want to sit on the hill and that can go for 2 hours, you know, doing that sort of thing.
It's also, it's not a safe hill either, because it is kind of steep.
Yeah, yeah. And look, I've always been of the belief of, like, let's play footy games in the most comfortable venues we can where there are fewer reasons to not go to the game. You know, give people a comfortable seat that is undercover where they can get food, they can go to the toilets, they can park the car close by, they don't have to wait 2.5 hours to leave, all that sort of stuff.
There's public transport available.
Yeah, exactly. And if you do that, you're going to get more people to games. And I think we see that with the new stadiums. As soon as new stadiums open, crowds go up.
Yeah.
And then you've got Leichhardt Oval, which, like, you know, you're jamming people into a 1960s football field. But when even in the 1960s, they wouldn't have said, oh, this is fantastic. I think another really good point that Warren Smith made on Twitter was he was talking about the football stadium up in Newcastle. And he's saying how he remembers when it opened and how much it's developed since then. And there's nobody that wishes that it was back to what it used to be in 1998 when the Knights first entered the competition. That's a really good point. Like when you get a stadium upgrade, no one says, oh, man, I wish we had the days where, you know, the stadium just was grass hills and you could smell piss from a mile away. No one wants that.
No. Some other weird comments was apparently someone was mentioning how Penrith now got gold-plated toilets.
Yeah, I wish.
I know they don't mean it literally, but I mean, fucking calm down, seriously.
I believe that was, it might have been the mayor of, not Leichhardt, but you know, that general area.
So someone who's got some power and some sway to actually get something done at Leichhardt, but never does.
No, Andrew, he has no way to fund anything there. He's asking for money from the New South Wales government to fund it.
Yeah, but can't get it done.
He mentioned all of the football games that played there and left out the part like where it's mostly junior football. And the reason that junior football and other lower grades and stuff like going there is that the ground hire is dirt cheap because the ground is fucking dreadful.
The playing surface is fine, but yeah, you can't. There's no parking there. So yeah, it's it's the perfect sort of venue for that lower grade stuff because you're not going to have an inundation of cars coming in because it's just the parents dropping off their kids. You know, so it's only the parents who've got to park around the street. So you're not going to be trying to get even 9,000 people in there. You're trying to get about 90 people there. So it's just people parking around, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. You've got to park on residential streets and in people's driveways and stuff everywhere to park around there.
It's ridiculous.
So that you know, junior league stuff is it's perfect for that. The playing surface is fine. And, you know, you don't need a big ground for it. That's what those grounds are perfectly built for. Mm. And there's nothing wrong with Leichhardt still being used for that purpose, moving it forward. But, and I said in the last episode, it's not an NRL quality venue.
No.
And it hasn't been for some time. And if they want to talk about fixing that and rectifying it, then they're going to need, first put a call. You can't talk about doing an upgrade while you have a fucking condemned stand, which is unsafe for the public to be in. Mm-hmm. So you're going to pull that thing down, right? And then you don't even have to build another stand there. Just put some basic seating in. So at least you can have some people sitting there. But that alone has cost you a ton of money, knocking that down, getting all that pest control done through there because it's been absolutely riddled with white ants. Then you've got to go through and check that the rest of the stand hasn't been impacted at all. And I wouldn't be surprised if it has. Check the trees out the back to make sure there's been no white ants in there as well. And you might have to clear some of those out if they are. You're not going to be able to build much in the way of stands because of that. And if you do, it's going to be expensive. There's no way it's going to cost $40 million or $100 million. The amount of money you have to outlay to get that place safe and then upgraded just by putting seats in there. We're not even talking about increasing the capacity there. You're probably going to end up, you know, it's going to work out about even, to be honest. It's so much money. This is why governments and councils, doesn't matter what side of politics you're on, because they've all been in power there. This is why they've all gone, why would we put that much money in there when, like, you can build a brand new stadium at Parramatta for about the same amount of money we might have to outlay to get Leichhardt up to scratch.
And by the way, Parramatta just up the road, you know, and the new Sydney Football Stadium just up the road. The Olympic Stadium is just up the road. Like, it's not like you have to drive very far to find a really good venue.
Yeah. And for three games a year.
Yeah, that's the other thing as well. Like, it's just silliness. And apparently this evening Shane Richardson was interviewed somewhere. I'm not really sure where, but he was talking about how, like, it's, you know, it's had its day, Leichhardt, and they've got to look at moving forward from it. So that's good that the club has finally got that mindset about them, because we all know where their future lies, and it's not at Leichhardt Oval. And it wasn't even towards the end of the Balmain Tigers. They knew that.
Yeah.
So it's all of this nostalgia stuff. Like, I get it. Nostalgia is very powerful, but nostalgia doesn't pay the bills. No. And that's what it comes down to. And exactly, if it was worth investing in Leichhardt Oval, guess what? Someone would have invested in Leichhardt Oval.
Yeah, it would have happened long before now.
Yep.
And that's the thing. While we keep trying to play games at Leichhardt Oval, we're taking games away from Campbelltown, which is in turn denying that venue from having enough games to attract any government funding to get that thing upgraded as well.
Yeah.
So they're white-anting themselves. Which is stupid.
And to have some fucking councillor from, like, what I consider an inner city suburb to be having shots at, like, the three-time premiers because they finally got an upgrade to their stadium. Go fuck yourself, buddy.
I'm going to say that councillor's only doing that because it gets them on the news because that's all they want.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if they wanted this ground fixed up, they would have done something about it a long time before now.
He can go and eat a fucking dick.
Just another Lee hat stand. Now that we've got that bullshit out of the way, let's get into that game. Yeah. This is the first time I've seen the West Tigers put in a consistent, solid 80 minutes defensively in I don't know how long.
Yeah. Well, but look, before the game, I saw Benji Marshall being interviewed on Fox Sports, and he said, like, rugby league's a funny game because the team that runs the hardest and the team that tackles the best usually wins the game. And that's what we're aiming to do. And I was thinking, man, Benji, I wish it was that easy. And honestly, that's what it was. Like, that's all it was. And I think what it did is it showed that the Cronulla Sharks don't really have that extra gear. Because when the West Tigers went to that point where they were like playing really, really well, the Sharks just couldn't go with them. And Nico Hines was kind of, he was trying, but he was a bit lost at sea. And yeah, it was just a real basic get in there and have a go at it. And on top of that, like Appy Coruscant had his first half of footy was outrageously good. Like it was incredible.
I couldn't touch him. The thing that gets me, okay, and I mentioned this in the preview that we did, season preview, is that when the Sharks have to start chasing points, they panic and they forget about all of their game plans and all the things that have always worked for them when they start from in front.
Yeah.
They go away from every system that they know works and they just do dumb shit. And one of the classic ones, and they did it over and over again against the Tigers, is they just keep shifting the ball around. So when the Sharks are playing good, they usually get this bit of a rhythm going where they go one out, go left, one out, go left or right, one out, go right, one out, spread it around, try and score points. And it's just this constant bringing the defense in, spreading them out, bring them in, spread them out. And it's just that constant moving around until you try and find a gap somewhere. And when they're attacking well, they keep doing that until they find that gap and they exploit that gap and they score points through it. And we can all agree that when the Sharks are playing good football and they're attacking well, they can put a fair bit of points on the scoreboard. But when they're behind on the scoreboard, especially early, they forget all of that. They start throwing the ball sideways a lot, which means they're not moving anywhere. And in the past, when that happened, the Tigers' defense would stand still and wait for them to run towards them.
Yeah.
What we saw on Saturday was the Tigers went, shut this shit down. So they'd run up and push them down. And Nico Hines, he was on his own a lot. He didn't help himself with that went out on the full because both of them were with no pressure on him because the Tigers weren't putting a huge amount of kick pressure on him.
Yeah.
But the Sharks' kicking game was dog shit.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. And they weren't trying to go through the middle, which was just nuts to me. Like, that's always been the Tigers' soft point, is just through that middle there. Eventually, they'll yield. And they kept playing on the edges of the ruck, which is where the Tigers' defense has been a little bit better. But instead of trying to run lines through it or, you know, try and find ways of getting around it or through it or change direction, they just kept passing the ball. And they go nowhere. And the Tigers were just able to shut them down easy. And it was just insane to watch how
that this is why the Sharks can't beat teams that are top eight teams for the most part, because you know you apply a little bit of pressure and they just can't handle it, and the you know they can get big wins, but they're always against terrible teams down the bottom of the ladder. So like my opinion of the Sharks hasn't changed for the last three seasons. It really hasn't. They're just exactly what, you know, we've talked about them being. I think the problem they're going to have this season is that I think that there are a couple of really terrible teams, but there's a very big chunk of teams in the middle of the pack who are all very, very close. And I think that if things kind of fall a certain way, you could see the Sharks like finishing 12th or 13th, you know, just because they haven't been able to go with teams that are putting in any sort of effort. They need a team to roll over and die on them.
That's pretty much it.
Pretty dire
to watch.
They need to stop buying forwards who just fucking bleed. Like, Craig Fitzgibbon has this thing about, like, oh, get me somebody they play and they're like a fucking hemophiliac, you know? They need to get some dudes that are, like, not 47 and don't bleed all the time. That'd be good.
I think one thing they really need to do, which is going to help a fair bit, is they need to move Talakai in onto the bench to be that explosive ball runner in the middle of the field or on the edges of the ruck. and put Kyle Iro in the centres. Because as much as Talakai played reasonably well against the Tigers, he just doesn't have the lateral movement.
No. It's too much for him. Yeah.
It's killing him. And he's still a brilliant, brilliant line runner and a very strong carrier of the ball. And he still makes plenty of metres. Man, bring him on once the defensive side have had to do about 20 minutes of defence and they've just started to get a little bit tired. Bring him on then and just let him rip through and destroy him. I think they're wasting both those players at the moment, which is just nuts to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a good run at doing something that was a bit unique, but it's just not working like it used to anymore. And
they should have done it last year, to be honest.
Yeah, they should have,
Penrith. Let's talk about the teams that matter. We've done the Tigers. Penrith, mate, Penrith.
They're a pretty good footy team, hey?
I like the fact they just went, you know, we'll just have a crack in the first half and see what happens.
Yeah.
We can do this. This is pretty easy, this game.
Look, to be fair, the Broncos were missing, you know, Adam Reynolds and they were missing Payne Haas, and then, you know, the entire game plan just revolved around headbutting Reece Walsh. So he was off the field pretty early on. But even accounting for that, and I thought that there were points where the Broncos played pretty well, but then, like Penrith, that they're just doing things that are crazy at the moment. And I think the incredible thing about this performance coming off the back of the Parramatta Eels win is that this is a team that has been in four straight grand finals and won three of them, and they're this good. Like, this isn't a shrinking violet team. This is a fucking good football team, and most of them are still... I mean, most of their key players haven't hit the peak of their careers, which is crazy. So seeing them put in a performance like that, it was a good hit out for the Panthers. I think that the Broncos will learn a lot from that performance and, you know, learn where you've kind of got to get to be the same level as Penrith. And I think they can get there. But, it was pretty impressive performance. And the only thing that come out of it is Nathan Cleary is now out for a month with a hamstring injury. So it'll be interesting to see how they go dealing with that. And they obviously, they've got Schneider that they'll probably bring in from New South Wales Cup to play alongside Luai. So we'll see how that all goes. But, I mean, it's you kind of can't bet against them at this point. They're a crazy football team. They're doing some shit that is just unbelievable.
A month or 4 weeks?
What's that?
4 weeks we reckon he's going to be out for?
Yeah, they reckon he's going to be out for 4 weeks. I don't know when James Fisher-Harris is back. But it's like there was a little whisper that he might have been back this week, but I don't think he will be.
The thing that works for Penrith there is the fact they've got a bye coming up in round six.
Mm-hmm.
But after the bye, they've got a bogey team, the Tigers.
Ooh, I actually looked at their draw after the bye, and it is like the most beautiful draw you could possibly have.
It's pretty good because Tigers, Cowboys, South, Bulldogs, Warriors, Sharks, Dragons, Manly, Newcastle, bye, Cowboys, Brisbane, bye.
Yeah, it's just like, oh my God, like they're going to wrap up the minor premiership in about round 10.
it's a pretty crazy run. There is a few injuries. Mitch Moses got a busted ankle.
I think he's got a broken foot. Broken foot.
That's 6 to 8 weeks he's going to be out comfortably.
Yep. Big Tino is out for the whole season. He's done his ACL, which is really sad.
Does that make Titans a wooden spoon contender?
Oh, 100%. They were, on the weekend, they were putrid. I drew a line in the sand on the Titans in the pre-season podcast that we did. I'm just sick of them. I've had enough. I haven't got any time for them. And they're performing like that.
Well,
they're so not far, a serious football team. They're disgusting.
So far this year, they've scored 4 points.
Yeah, they're fucked. They're absolutely fucked. It's crazy. It's, you know, and Des Hasler's their coach. Good luck.
Yeah. I'll just expand on that. 52 players have scored more points than the Titans this year.
Holy shit, that's nuts.
We can go a bit further.
Mm-hmm.
127 players have scored as many points as the Titans or more this year.
Shit.
After two games. Man. There's only one person who has scored points, but not as many as the Titans this year, and that's Daly Cherry Evans because he's got one.
The thing that gets me, like if I was an owner of that club, I'd be furious because you've got to wonder when is anybody there going to take it seriously? And Big Tino was one of the few that did. Like, there's not too many people that are involved in that club where you watch them play and you're like, oh, yeah, he's going at it. Like, Brimson, or whenever I see him play, I'm always like, this guy's playing as hard as he can, whether he's in position or he's out of position. Campbell, when he plays, is the same. Tino's always amazing for them. But then there's plenty of players in that team where you're like fucking foreign. Like, can they just put him out to pasture? Like, it's done. It's over. I don't want to hear this shit about, oh, you know what? When he's injury free, he's great. Nah, shut up. That doesn't happen. Okay. Just get rid of him. Like, be serious about football. Be serious about being in the NRL or sell a fucking team to Perth. I'm just over them.
You know how last year there was that talk about the fact that it had been 365 days between NRL wins for Luke Brooks?
Yeah.
Do you think we will get to two full years between Des Hasler wins as a coach? Because his last win was July 16, 2022 as a coach.
He's got to get to July.
Yeah. And he's lost his last 9 straight NRL games.
Has he? Oh, man. You know what? That's difficult to do.
And there's been a bunch of big losses there. So this is when he's at Manly.
Yeah.
20-6 to the Dragons, 20-10 to the Roosters, 36-20 to Parramatta, 44-24 to the Titans, 40-6 to Cronulla, 48-6 to Canberra, 21-20 to the Bulldogs.
Mm-hmm.
And then this year, 28-4 to the Dragons and 32-0 to the Bulldogs.
He must be close to getting towards, like, longest losing streak for a coach in history.
I'll have to check that out, but he's on a bit of a run.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
Something that shouldn't happen in the salary cap era and across two different clubs.
Yeah.
That's insane.
And do you know what his nickname is by chance?
Des. No, what is it?
Sorry.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder why that is.
Because apparently when he was a player, if you ever hit someone a little bit high or a little bit too hard, he used to apologise to him on the field.
Oh, really?
So he used to call him sorry.
Made his debut for the Penrith Panthers.
He did.
Mm.
Hell of a player.
Yeah, he was handy. He was a very handy player.
Pretty mediocre coaching record at the moment, though.
Never trust a coach that has a head of hair.
Well, we've made this clear.
Mm-hmm. Name one good coach that has a fucking head of hair. I'd pay up for him, Ivan Cleary, but he's maybe an alien.
He's part alien. I think he's probably got a wig on, if we're honest.
Imagine if they win like their 4th straight premiership and he just drags the wig off.
He takes off thinking he's wearing a hat and goes, oh shit.
That would be brilliant.
Well, I mean, Benji Marshall's still got hair, but I mean, that's because he doesn't coach.
Yeah, well, he's a part-time coach. Pretty obvious.
Is he even that much of a coach? I don't think he's coaching that much, is he?
Look, it's 10:23 on a Monday night. I bet he's not coaching right now.
He's in bed.
How can you take that seriously?
He's in bed, but he's asleep.
I love it when the journalists say, you know what, I know Benji Marshall. No. Hey, guess what, journalist? You don't know fucking Benji Marshall, you idiot.
I love the fact that they gave him all that shit. And in just his second game, he silenced a team that was in the finals last year very emphatically.
Mm-hmm.
And they've all gone. So Leichhardt Oval.
Yeah. Oh, far out. Did you notice something about? I'm not gonna say what I noticed about it, but did you notice something about one of the sideline reporters for that match?
Would it be a bald man?
Yes.
Who was never a coach?
Was there something about him that you thought he seems quite merry today?
Yeah, he's carrying quite a large erection.
He seemed very I don't know. I don't even know the word that you'd use for it.
Hard.
No, well, I wouldn't say hard, but
it's funny. He spent the best part of the last decade finding every opportunity he could to shit on the club constantly when he had, because it's a point you've made well over the entire lifetime of this podcast. He thinks he's an insider and he just isn't.
Yeah.
And the only club he feels like he's an insider at because he's a fan of them, this is straight from the Buzz Rossfield book, is the team that he supports, and that's the West Tigers. Buzz does the same with the Sharks. You know, Buzz was writing a million articles during the Asada stuff because he could talk to one or two people that were worked in the club and, oh, I've got all the news now. And that's what Hooper did. You know, there was one or two useless pricks who were involved at the club who would talk to the journos all the time, and Hooper knew who they were, and so he kept talking to them and kept getting all the news. Spreading bullshit and rumours and all this crap around just to make himself prominent, but not to actually report on anything that's actual news. And now that all that's stopped, and he went on a brief period of, you know, sooking about the club.
Yeah.
And then they come out with a big win at Leichhardt, and he's gone, oh, I love this club. And going, you know what? There's a difference between having the shits with the way a club's run, like I've had, right? But I wouldn't go around spreading rumours around and death riding the fucking club and, you know, only talking about all the... I'm trying to think the best way to put it to sum up what he'd done.
Well,
all the absolute failures of the club and how it has absolutely no future, because that's kind of the way he always talked about it. And we'd always talked about, it's hard not to talk about all the fucking failings and the miseries of the club, but it was more often than not constructive. There was always a suggestion on what they should be doing to make things better and how they could improve themselves and how they could look forward to the future, and always say that there's still something for them to move forwards to. They've just got to make the right decisions and where those decisions need to be made. And that's realistic. And he's not working from a realistic base. He's working from a base of, I need to say as much stuff as I can about anything at all, and the only club that I can figure out what to do is the one that leaks to me, and it's just the West Tigers are the only one. And now that's not happening. And that's why he's seeing this change in attitude, is because he's now got no leads for any news whatsoever, because the only ones he was getting from was Lee Hatstand, and he's not there anymore. That's it. So he's got to be nice now. He's got to play nice. And this is what you're going to get. And it's sycophantic bullshit. Fuck, I hate him. He's such a dickhead.
They all are. They all are.
I keep yo-yoing around trying to figure out which one's the worst, because they keep doing something dumb.
It's Dean Ritchie. It's Dean Ritchie.
I'm pretty confident he's.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm surprised he hasn't had it. Has he shit on Latrell Mitchell this week?
Give it time.
Okay. He's got a cycle. He's got a few hot button topics he pushes on every now and then.
He likes his fucking eggs over easy. Like there'll be something.
Oh god, I hope that's the story. So some of the other games. Let's see. Warriors beat the Raiders 18-10. I didn't get to watch this one.
I did. Warriors looked really good. Warriors, they needed to win. They couldn't start the season 0-3 with the patches that they'd had that was looked so good, and with all of that support that they've got in New Zealand and everyone's excited, they couldn't start 0-3. And they got the job done against the Canberra Raiders. It was interesting to see Raiders fans were blowing up about it, about the video referee and all that. They just got beat. They just flat out got beat. and that the Raiders were making some typical Raiders mistakes. Rapana, who I saw one of the Raiders fan websites, player of the match for the Raiders only, but he was just, he had a Rapana game, man. He was fucking terrible. And yeah, that it was, look, it was a real typical Canberra Raiders performance, but the Warriors played really well. So it was good to see them win in front of a big crowd in Christchurch too. So that was great to see.
That's good. And I hear that RTS had to fill in at fullback at the end.
He did a little bit, yeah, and he did it all right, you know.
Of course he did.
he'd
have been loving that.
Yeah, he must have felt right at home, hey. He's been playing all right in the centres, though. I think that it's a good idea for them to keep him out there in the centres, and, you know, he'll get the job done there. And if they need him at fullback, he's a really good fullback option.
Insanely good. Bulldogs just belted the Titans in the second half.
I didn't see this game, hey, because I turned it on, right? And I was like, here we go. And then the Titans basically bombed a try immediately. And like, when I say bombed a try, they everything was done. And I think it was Brimson passed it to, might have been Kieran Foran, and he just knocked it on. What, like a meter from the line, no one in front of him. They were coasting to a try. I was like, oh, shit, eh? And then I immediately fell asleep and woke up and the scoreline was just a horror show. I was like, holy shit.
Couldn't believe it. At halftime, the Bulldogs dropped 12-0.
Mm.
And, yeah, I didn't get to watch the second half. I came back to it just as the game was coming to a close. And, oh, they put another 20 on in the second half without being touched. Yeah, Titans are... They were not even in it. That's a bad result.
Yeah, real bad. Real bad.
Cowboys Dragons. I still don't know what to make of this game. I saw bits and pieces of it. The Cowboys won 46-24. And I don't know. The Cowboys should have won.
Mm.
But I don't know what to make of the fact that they let the Dragons score 24 points.
It's because they're soft. They're really, really soft. And I think that it was only because they were playing the Dragons that they were able to get a result like that, because you can go straight through this Cowboys team and they don't put up too much resistance. I think the Cowboys will finish in the top eight just for the fact that they will do this to teams that are not great, but there's zero chance of being premiers, because teams like the Storm and the Panthers, are, even Parramatta, are just going to walk through them.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. The one stat that stood out for me when I was looking at this one was the fact that they had 56% possession.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of ball to have. In these games, you're not going to... Very rarely, you're going to see a team gets to 60%. So to get up around 56 is pretty high. And to have had the Dragons was basically such little opportunities. Put on 24 points.
Yeah.
And look, to be honest, 18 of them were in the first half.
Yeah, like in early in the match, it looked like the Dragons were absolutely going to flog them. And it turned around. But, yeah, the Cowboys just don't have it up front. And it's going to cost them this year. So you can't look at them as a real contender. Like, they're going to be fun to watch. But I think we'll see a lot of score lines like this out of them, where the opposition, like, they'll win a game, but the opposition scored way too many points.
Yeah. On Sunday, Parramatta beat Manly 28-24.
Yeah, this was a fun game to watch. And it's funny because in the aftermath of it, it's all descended into, did Jake Trbojevic deserve to be penalised for an obstruction call? And I did a tweet about this, and, you know, there were a lot of people that agreed, but there were some people that, you know, got pissy about it and were like, oh, you know. It's weird. Dudes on Twitter act like fucking teenage girls when you say something bad about their footy team. Even when you just don't agree with them about their footy team, they turn into fucking like mean girls. It's really weird. But yeah, like, I don't know. Did you see that abstraction call? I thought it was really straightforward.
Yeah, I must admit, I did see it. I don't know what the drama was.
Mm. Like, he goes up, he stops in the line. He literally, the line gets, you know, accordions up on Jake Trbojevic, and they run through the exact hole that is left there because the line couldn't go across. And there were people that were like, oh, you know, the fucking Parramatta player should have been desperately trying to get around him. It's like, you know, when you were, you know, when the rules allowed a defensive player to obstruct the defensive line. Do you remember when that rule was written?
No.
It was in 1895. Like, it's not a new rule, people. You can't do it. So why are people arguing about it? Like, shut the fuck up, you idiot.
It's nuts. And to be honest, Jake Trbojevic has done this a few times in his career. And you'll see a lot of teams will be, Manly used to do it a lot, and they got out of it. But they used to have a lot of players who they would run a decoy line, but they'd just jog to the line and stop there.
Yeah.
And they used to, like, Martin Tapau used to do it a lot there when he was with them. Curtis Thirin used to do it a lot. Jake, not as often as they did, but he would do it every now and then. And more often than not, it would lead to tries that they would go and score away from where that obstruction happened, have to get recalled because they've obstructed someone in the back play.
Yeah.
You just go, just keep running through. You don't have to sprint through. Just jog five more steps, and you're out of the way, and the try gets awarded. It's the laziest, dumbest thing you could do, and it's always a penalty. It will always be a penalty.
It is just so black and white, and it's funny. People were like, well, I understand that technically it's in the rule book, but common sense, it's like, no, fucking common sense states that if you go up and you stop the defensive line from sliding across and then you run into the hole that's left there, that's a fucking penalty, man.
Mm.
And it was like people couldn't understand it. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's a crazy one. That seemed cut and dried to me. Manly, though, I think they did pretty well given how little ball that they had for this entire game and how much Parramatta dominated most of the game. They did pretty well to be only down by 4 points at full time. Parramatta's defense is still a bit iffy at times.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what to make of Parramatta, because...
No, I'm the same. I'm more convinced about Manly being a solid team than I am about Parramatta, to be honest, after this game.
So I think it's going to fall apart for Manly. And
it probably will, but I think given whenever you see a team keep up with an opponent who has dominated the game, to me that says more about the team that's, you know, that's behind in every stats metric, but they're somehow staying in the match, and it does about the team that's in front, but only just.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like if you have that much possession and you're dominating the game everywhere and they had so much more second phase play for Parramatta and they only won by four, something wrong with that attack. That's what I don't get about them. I can't put my finger on what to do with them. They're the new Newcastle Knights for me.
I think Parramatta might be like the Cronulla Sharks over the last couple of years. That they'll do really well against not so good teams, but the really good teams. And look, they might jag wins here and there, but when it comes to the finals, I don't think the really good teams are going to worry about Parramatta. And I tell you what, Mitch Moses, and he's out for 2 months with a broken foot, but if he could take one fucking game where he doesn't run around with his hands in the air, pleading with the referee to change results, like if he could do that and get rid of that loser bullshit, that would be great. That'd be really good for his footy.
He's got an uncle that used to do it all the time.
Exactly. And how many fucking grand finals did he win?
Yeah, that's right. Almost won. If you could just kick the ball a bit harder. How you doing, Benny? Finally, Newcastle Knights beat the Storm 14-12.
Yeah, that was a bit of a shock, but the Storm were missing that, you know, their halves and that. But it was a good performance by the Knights. Like, it would have been really easy to go into that game and be like, okay, they're missing their halves, you know. we'll get the win here, and then the Storm just smacks you, because that's what the Storm does. But they got the win, so yeah, and they needed to get a win too, because they were like a little bit in the same boat as the New Zealand Warriors. Like, they've had patches where they've looked all right, but they couldn't start the season with a duck egg. So it was good to see them get a win.
Yeah, for me, there was a bit of ill discipline from both sides.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little sloppy at times, not horribly, but just a little bit. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I know you said the Storm didn't have any, you know, any of the starting halves there, but I mean, the Knights don't have any halves at all, so it's kind of even. And, you know, Caelan Ponga just had to do everything.
Yeah.
He has started the season very well as well.
He has.
And if he was playing for Cronulla, he'd probably get 6 points every game.
Yeah, but that, I mean, there's only one player who gets 6 points in every game.
Yeah.
But how fucking irrelevant are the Dalian Awards? It's crazy. But yeah, I don't think anyone's worrying too much about the Knights in the grand scheme of things. The thing that got me in this game was it was one of those matches where very early on, when the Melbourne Storm were making mistakes and stuff, Craig Bellamy wasn't blowing up. And I was like, oh, he thinks they can't win this game. Because whenever he feels like they can win the game, he's like frothing at the mouth and swearing at everyone, making everyone's life in the coach's box just horrible. And he was pretty chilled for this game. So I was like, oh, yeah, he's resigned to this one.
Yeah. It was an interesting week for results. I think there was a few that might have surprised a few people out of that.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing early on in the competition.
It is. It's fun. It's really fun when you get results that go against what you were expecting. You know, and I know you and me are very much like, that's why we play the games, that we, you know, where there's people out there that feels like when they have tipped something and a result doesn't go that way, that they're personally wounded, which is kind of funny. Fucking people's egos. They're like, oh, I'm fucking, it's like, no, that's why we play footy, man.
That's right. And look, to be honest, the only thing that matters right now is that the Tigers are ninth again.
Everything's right in the world.
The yin and the yang and all that sort of gear.
Yeah.
Everything's just balanced perfectly. The world is in harmony. It's lovely.
Maybe they should have gone with a part-time coach years ago, hey? Don't. Don't.
Okay. That means they've been using part-time board members.
By the way, a big shout-out to Carsten Brummer. Hey, we saw your comments in our our
Carsten. YouTube.
Yeah.
We
were cracking up when we read them last week. It was after the podcast we read them, and we were fucking cracking up over them.
Yeah, we love Carsten.
Yeah, we do. We do.
He's a great man. Does a lot of great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He did make a comment in the last episode. And he said he thinks they're going to rename Manly's home ground to Brooksvale Oval.
Brooks, yeah.
So, get behind Carsten Brummer. If not just for the lols, okay? The guy is doing a lot of work for the German Rugby League.
Yeah.
So, if you want to find out a bit more about what's going on in the European Rugby League, especially over in Germany there, get behind him. He'll give you an education. That's a good thing.
Yeah, and he actually goes to these places too. Like, he's not doing this shit over email and stuff. Like, he's there,
yeah.
Which is, I'm a big fan of that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah, he's very heavily involved.
Mm-hmm.
Doing great work.
Mm-hmm.
What else has been going on? I'm sure there's been some other stuff.
Look, it's the thing for me has been how good the footy's been to start the year. The injuries to key players are interesting because there's not too many teams that haven't got a really important player on the sideline now. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to really test the depth for a lot of clubs. And the clubs that have got their full lineup there, they're really going to have to do something while I can, because I think that, you know, when we get towards the end of the season, I reckon that the finals race is going to be really tight, and there could be a bunch of teams involved in it too. So that's going to be interesting to see. There was news that come through this week that the Penrith Panthers were going to be going to Las Vegas next year, and that they had re-signed Talon May, who I think that a lot of Panthers fans thought that he was gone. He was going to go elsewhere. So now they've got Tungor and May, you know, in the centres. It's so crazy, Andrew. It's like, if it comes out we've been cheating the salary cap for the last 5 years, I don't care. I just don't give a shit, because what we're seeing out of this fucking team is insane.
It is pretty crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
I know something we could discuss.
Okay, tell me.
Stats.
Hit me with some cool stats.
I spent last night going through and compiling ladders.
Yes.
On days turnaround from 2019 to round three this year.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at how each team performs based on the number of days turnaround they've got.
Yep.
So for we've got 5 through to 9 individually, and then 10 plus days. So I think the 10 plus days would be if you've played a Thursday game and your next game's on a Sunday, that'd be 10 days.
Well, I guess there would also be buys as well.
That's right, buys. And also, because it's from 2019, it also includes the break during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I included that because the season had already started.
Yeah.
And there's a 2-month break in there.
For those that don't remember, back in 2020, I believe it was, we had a period of time where there was this flu that we shut down the entire planet over. Because if you got this flu, there was a 0.00001% chance that you could have got really sick from it.
Can we bring it back? But let me add to that, because the one thing that COVID gave me above everything else is a public transport system that ran on time every fucking day. if I can't have that, can we have Taylor Swift in Melbourne? Because they did the same thing when she was here. Everything went perfectly while she was here, and as soon as she went, back to shit.
Why don't we just get Taylor Swift back and we put her like in a glass box, right?
Yeah.
And we hang her from a tower, but just so people can see her presence, it like hanging in this glass box in the tower, and people will be like, everyone's just got to make sure everything works because of Taylor's presence.
Yes. There's an idea.
Mm.
Maybe she's the cure for COVID. Anyway, the 5 days.
Yeah, keep going. Keep going.
5 days turnaround letter.
Would that be an ointment?
Yeah. 2019 to 2024. Melbourne is the only team to be undefeated with a 5-day turnaround with 10 wins from 10 games.
Oh, that's interesting. Who's the team with the worst record there?
The worst? The Dragons, 9 games, 1 win.
Okay.
Now, I have put all of these up on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I've put a little color code on there too for the for, against, and win percentage. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty simple. If you've got if the number is shaded green, then that means it's above the overall average for that period for that team. And if it's orange, then it's under. Simple as that. Okay. So South Cronulla, Newcastle, and the West Tigers were all above average in all for, against, and win percentage.
Okay.
For the 5-day turnaround. So they should probably be trying to get more of those games. It may not work out. The players won't agree, but, you know, the results are hard to argue with.
Yeah, yeah.
6-day turnaround. Penrith, top of the list here. 31 wins from 37 games.
Holy shit. My guess is that with the Panthers, they don't have too many short turnarounds just because they probably feature in like the matches that Channel 9 wants on a lot of the time. So they're not, for instance, you know, going from, say, Sunday night to Thursday's game.
It's interesting, the five-day turnaround, there's a lot of teams that are kind of about the same. So
okay.
Manly, Parramatta, and the Roosters had 11 games each, which is the most.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was Melbourne with 10, then South, Penrith, Canberra, the West Tigers, and the Dragons with 9. And the lowest was, obviously, the Dolphins, but other than them, Newcastle, the Cowboys, and the Broncos with 6 games.
Okay, so that doesn't really line up, does it?
It's the kind of middle of the road, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
So the majority of the games are in the 6, 7, and 8 day turnaround because that's only one day either side of a full week.
Mm-hmm.
So who's got the most games here? Melbourne with 39 games in a 6 day turnaround, followed by the Cowboys with 38, and Penrith had 37. The West Tigers had 30 games, which looks to be the least. Other than the Dolphins.
Yeah.
So there's not too much of a variance there either.
Yeah, yeah.
Which goes to show that they're starting to get the balance right with the draw.
With the draw, yeah, yeah. And that's a good thing, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Penrith were the best team there with a win percentage of 83%. Melbourne's attack on a six-day turnaround, pretty bloody potent. Scored 1,079 points in 39 games, which is points difference of 442 points.
Holy shit.
Fucking insane.
That's crazy.
The worst team was the Knights. 31 games, 7 wins.
Ooh, that is rough.
Right, so what's the next one? The 7 days turnaround. This is a full week. And this one has some pretty wild variances in it.
Mm-hmm.
So Penrith are at the top here again, 32 games, 24 wins. But we've got, just have a look, Canberra had 37 games, which is the most. And Manly's got the least with 23.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 14-game difference between most and least on the 7 day turnaround. Yeah, it's Canterbury with the most. They've got 44 games on the 7 day turnaround.
Holy crap.
Yeah. And they won 11 of 44, and they've got the worst record.
That's not a surprise.
The West Tigers, 11 wins from 29 games. They're almost in the top 10 there.
Nice.
That's pretty solid.
I wish they were ninth.
Yeah, it would be. I don't think they finished ninth on any of these, sadly.
Damn it. Throw them out.
Throw them out. 8 days turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
Dolphins, 2 games, 2 wins. So they're at the top. Aside from that, the Roosters, 13 wins from 17 games.
Yeah.
Followed by Melbourne and Penrith. The most games here is Canberra, South, Warriors, the Cowboys with 26 games, and the Dragons have only had 15.
Oh, wow.
And the West Tigers were last. 23 games, 6 wins. So if you give the Tigers, what we've learned from this, if you give the Tigers too much rest, they get shittier. They're better when they get less rest.
That's funny.
9 days turnaround. This is where they start getting a little bit fewer in number. Mm-hmm. Penrith at the top here, equal with South, with 10 wins from 12 games. The Roosters have 10 wins from 13 games. Melbourne has 15 games with 9 days turnaround, which is the highest.
Mm-hmm.
And the Warriors and the Cowboys have the least number with 6 each.
Okay.
And the Dolphins at the bottom with 1 loss from 1 game.
It's really interesting. They really have done a good job of balancing the draw up, haven't they?
Yeah, that's the thing I found really fascinating about this. Other than the 7 day turnaround one, there's a pretty big variance. Most of them are within 10 games when it's really high, and 5 games is a lot less.
I always find it interesting when people talk about, like, who's had a tougher draw and that sort of thing, because I think it all evens out over the course of a year. But then you look at, like, as we were talking about earlier, the Panthers run after their upcoming bye, and that's clearly a very, very easy draw for them. But you know, I bet that their run into the finals is really, really rough, just to counter that. But, yeah, the NRL doing a good job with their draws. That's great to see.
I wonder who does the draws.
I think that they outsource it to a third-party company.
You don't think it's Graham Annesley?
I don't think he does anything. Did you see he was saying how he was disappointed that the NRL didn't charge Talon May for having that head clash with Reece Walsh, and he thought it should. And it's like, hey, Graham, you are the fucking NRL, you idiot. Like, who are you talking about? Why are you complaining to us? It's you lot. That was in his little PowerPoint presentation that he did on Monday.
You're complaining to us about you.
Yeah, yeah. Crazy.
He's an idiot. Yeah, not a huge amount else that I can think of that's going on.
No, it's been good. I think that, you know, they've tried to take the focus off of the footy, but the footy has been fantastic. And, you know, I'm really enjoying watching these games. And I think the cool thing is you can tune in no matter who the team is. You know you're going to see something. Apart from if you watch a Titans game, you're just going to watch them roll over and die because they're not a real football club.
Yeah, and now, I mean, the Tigers have stopped being a team that just gets belted every week. Now you don't know if they're going to get belted every week or not.
Yeah, exactly.
So now you have to tune in and probably watch them get belted. But, you know, every now and then, they'll surprise you.
They have won one game so far this year, 50% of them.
It's been glorious. I mean, yeah. We can wrap the season up now. I'm happy.
Oh, shit.
I'm happy. I'm happy.
It'll be interesting to see if they can, number one, keep it up. And, if they play like that, they're going to get a lot of wins just against teams like I think of, you know, you look at teams like the Titans, the Dragons, the Bulldogs, they're a little bit different from what I can see so far this year. But there are teams out there that they just have no constitution about them.
Yeah.
And so if they play like that, they'll get those wins. Yeah. And like Benji said, like it's about running harder and tackling well. And if you do that, you're halfway there.
He's shown that he's got a little bit more of a grasp on coaching than Tommy Radonikis did. he's got just that bit more of a game plan.
That's true.
That's handy. There was some sad news today, and that was the passing of Ian Heads, very highly respected rugby league author and journalist for a long, long period of time. He was 81, sharp as a tack, and someone who I personally knew and had spent a bit of time talking with and interacting with via emails and meeting face-to-face and stuff like that. A very, very giving human, always willing to help out people that were new to rugby league history or getting into the journalism or the, you know, the author world, that sort of stuff. Always wanted to help out. He loved what we were doing with the rugby league project. It seemed to me every time I spoke with him that he felt that the best thing you could ever do is, however possible, get whatever stories you can get about this game and get them written down for other people to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Huge respect to him. Very sad loss. And yeah, can't really say much more. I did make a tweet about him. Just someone that you really, really, really well respected person in the game and the game's history. So yeah, rest in peace to Ian and condolences to his family and friends.
Yeah, it was very sad to hear that, and I think that when you get people, and he was definitely one of them, that are like custodians of the history of the sport and that love telling the stories of the history of the sport. And, you know, everyone has a book that he was involved in, you know. And, yeah, it was sad to hear of his passing. It made me think about all of the, you know, just the rugby league history that he knew about that's you know, such a great resource of a person that you could talk about the game like in so many different eras. You could talk about it with him and now he's not with us anymore. But I mean, he wrote so many amazing things about the game's history. And yeah, so when I heard about his passing, it was very sad. I know he was really, really generous to you guys at Rugby League Project. And as you say, it's because he really liked what yous were doing. And, you know, it made me actually think about how, like, you get to that point where some of the historians that we grew up reading their books and things like that, and, you know, they are getting on now and it's up to the next generation. And I guess you're part of that next generation of rugby league historians. And, you know, I guess there'll come a point where it'll be the next generation and you'll get an email or something, or you'll talk to somebody, some young dude that's, you know, got this fascination for the game's history, and you'll have that moment. And it's really cool to think about passing down that sort of thing. And I think that, you know, Ian would have wanted that to be part of his legacy, that he sort of took up the baton of rugby league history, and he sort of passed it forward to others to keep running with. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's also seen quite a evolution in how rugby league was reported on and spoken about from when he first joined the journalism ranks,
mm-hmm.
to how it was, you know, when he departed.
Mm.
And we're already seeing, currently, every one of us that are on the internet all the time, we're currently seeing the further evolution of that, and that is a lot of independent people analysing the game in new and more amazing ways that's never been done before.
Yeah.
You know, there was the Rugby League eye test who I mentioned last week. We've also got Gainline Analytics with Ben Darwin, the stuff they're doing. A lot of this stuff has used Rugby League Project in the past, and we just look at it as record-keeping data.
Yeah.
But they've taken all that stuff, and with their skill sets and other data sources that they've got, have managed to turn it into something far more intense, in-depth, and telling, and helpful, and useful, and obviously very, very, you know, invaluable to read and to study, and clubs are using this stuff as well. And it's amazing how the evolution of that record keeping and the recording of the game's history, how that's changed. It used to just be put it into a book, and then it goes into podcasts, it goes into YouTube videos, it goes into stats. It just, because it's all getting digitized like that, it is actually now properly being looked after forever.
Yeah, yeah. And look, you and me remember when you'd go on the internet and there'd be none of it. Like nothing at all, literally nothing. And it's such a big difference now. It's fantastic to see. And yeah, for it to be documented in so many different ways, so that no matter if you're interested in the data side of it, you can look at that. If you're interested in more of like the, I don't even know the way to explain it. Like for me, I kind of think of it as being almost a romantic look at the rugby league, the way I sort of.
It is. It's storytelling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's his real strong point. And I mentioned on Twitter too, there's two books to me that really, really showcase the width of his knowledge and the depth of his passion for the game and the research and the history. And that is a book he wrote, I think it must have been around very early 1990s, called True Blue. It's about the story of the New South Wales Rugby League, how Rugby League in Australia was born, and goes through every single season, all the ups and downs, everything that happened. That would have been something that would have taken many, many years of meticulous research to get done. That's the dedication side and how much knowledge he has. And then there's another one called The Night the Music Died, and that was about Western Division winning the 1974 AMCO Cup, which was all the Sydney clubs were in it. All the elite clubs in Australia were playing in that. And this bunch of blokes from the bush came out of nowhere to win that. And that was a much more recent book. And he's gone out to to meet many of those players. He's gone out to the regions where they lived. He's spoken to them all, and the stories in that book. For me, I find it a brilliant read because it reminds me of some of the sort of characters and the people that I grew up around as well, living in the country town. Mm. And he just gets the whole feel of it and how they all saw it, and shows you how dedicated he was to look into something as small as a minor cup competition that one team that wasn't a Sydney club won once.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was no parameters on his research and his passion for the game's history, and those two books show that really well. He's got a ton of other ones, obviously, but if you haven't read The Night the Music Died, I strongly recommend it. It's a brilliant read.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a sad loss for the game, really.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
Now, we've got to end on a high note.
Mm-hmm.
So should we look at what's been going on over in England?
Okay. I know one thing that's not happening, and that's that some people that are owed money by Featherstone aren't getting their money just yet.
Yes. Now, did we mention this on the last episode about, was it Craig Hall?
I think we did, yeah. I think that, is it Joey Leilua is another one now that's come out and said that they owe him some money.
Yeah, and there was another player, Dane, I forgot his name. He used to play for the Storm, Dane Chisholm.
All right.
I think he was another player as well that was waiting on something from them. And the club themselves came out. Yes, Dane Chisholm says, Featherstone still owe me my settlement. I was contracted for 2024. Understandably, they had budget cuts. I happily retired and moved back to Australia with my young family. So there's another one here saying, Featherstone owes me £7,500. Mm-hmm. The RFL have also done nothing to help.
Yeah, that's the thing that gets me, is the Rugby Football League just doesn't give a shit, hey?
Is that, though, because all of the clubs are basically privately owned now? So the RFL just goes, if you can't look after your finances, then we'll just take competition points off you because that's all we can do. Like, how's that going to help the players?
Well, you would think that as the governing body, they should be, like, if they don't have the power to do something, that's once again a failure of the Rugby Football League. Like,
yeah,
they should be able to do something, but it's just, it's a different mindset they have over there, and I don't understand it. I really don't, because to me, like, everybody in the game over there should be focused on this and saying this cannot happen. And it's just a case of like, oh yeah, that's happening over there, but that doesn't affect me, so I don't really care about it. And it's a really bad way to look at it, because eventually it's going to affect other people. And we've seen it time and time again. I mean, how many English clubs have gone bust and they owe people money and nothing ever comes of it? Like, no one cares, because it's, you know, if it's affecting them but it's not affecting me, I'm fine. I don't have to worry about it. Silly.
It's just nuts. And I don't know. For me, there's two things. If I'm running a sport and I'm the governing body, I'd want to have some sort of control over the clubs and the welfare of the players, because those two things are without those two things, you don't have anything to govern.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that those two are all perfectly fine and you've got some sort of control over them. But RFL have zero. And the other one is, surely when the drama that went and happened at Bradford several mm-hmm. times over a couple of years, that should have been the moment where they go, okay, we've got to do something about having a players' union that has some fucking teeth.
Yeah.
And it feels like that just never happened, and it's still not happening.
Well, you know what it reminds me of is when we had the Super League war over here, and basically it came out in the courts, the Wales Rugby League / Australian Rugby League didn't have the ability to say who was and wasn't in their competition, and it seemed so fucking basic.
Yeah.
Or then you go back, like, earlier, and we talked about this in the Super League episodes we did, or the Super League War episodes we did, where at one point News Limited owned all of the IP of the clubs somehow. Like, just silly things like that, where it's so amateur that you wonder how it could be happening. And that was one of the, that's one of the good things that happened with the formation of the National Rugby League, in that because it came out of basically court case after court case after court case, and then the lawyers got together and said, okay, we're going to make this merged competition. And it was the lawyers that did it. You know, they dotted the I's and crossed the T's. Because it was lawyers that put it together, we had a competition where the NRL actually could say who was and was not in their competition. They had all of these, the legal framework to make things actually happen. So that, and I think about, like, say, when the Melbourne Storm was caught breaking the salary cap, the NRL could strip them of points and premierships and fine them and stuff. And they had the legal framework to actually do that and enforce that. And the Storm could not go to court and get it overturned or anything, because the NRL was put together by lawyers at the end of the day. They don't have that over in England. They've never had that sort of moment over there. So I would bet that there are, I bet there are some things over there that, like, they just don't have the ability to make a decision on, because they don't have the legal framework to do it.
Yeah. And to me, that seems like something that they should have rectified many, many years ago, and they need to find a way to work around that and get something set up now.
Yep.
Because this has happened far too often.
Yeah.
And it's the players who get fucked over the most. And every time a club folds and players get, you know, get let go because they can't get paid, a percentage of those players eventually go, how can I trust any other club that I go to?
Yeah.
So they go, I'm just going to go back to Australia and I'll play club football there, or I'll go and play rugby union, or I'll just retire or something like that. And you start turning a bunch of players away from the game. And sure, they might be experienced ones, but it also means that you could end up with a bunch of young players that come to the game and they're not too sure if they're going to get guaranteed money or not. And that's kind of important when you're playing a full-time professional sport.
Yeah, it's what the sport was founded on, making sure you get compensated for your time playing the sport. And here we are in 2024 and, you know, players are getting shortchanged by one of the clubs. It's fucking outrageous, quite honestly. But there isn't a drive over there to really rectify it on any great scale. It's just, you know, they don't mind allowing it to happen to other people. And they talk big game. They really do. They talk, oh, let's get a players association together, and that's all just bullshit. It's absolutely bullshit.
It really is. Something that we did mention in the last episode was something that we found about the International Rugby League.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about this.
We were mucking around one day. And I don't know why, what we were looking for, but we went onto the ABN website and we were looking up something about rugby league. And I found the International Rugby League had an ABN in Australia. I might have looked it up. I'm getting the impression that it was something that someone took advantage of because no one else had claimed it. Kind of like what you do with websites.
How dare you? Domains. But exactly like that, yes.
Because this person has a bunch of ABNs that have existed under this sign, like Fair Dickham Builds, Mudgee Sheds, Seven Valley Sheds.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And they have the ABN for International Rugby League.
Yeah.
Because what were we doing? Because me and Andrew, sometimes the podcast ends and it's like, you know, about midnight when it does. And we'll be talking, and then all of a sudden it's 2:30 a.m. and we're looking into, like, who actually owns the International Rugby League? And, like, they owe money to the – well, they don't owe money, but they lend money from the Rugby That's League right. International Federation, which is still a company somehow. But who owns that company?
That's right.
Where have they got that money from? Right. And
Now I'm reverse engineering. That's right. So now I remember how we got there. Because we're looking into the one report that we've seen, financial report we've seen for the International Rugby League.
Mm.
And when they became the International Rugby League, after being the Rugby League International Federation, they borrowed money from the Australian Rugby League not the NRL. It was a body called the Australian Rugby League. It was a body that they borrowed money from to set up International Rugby League, I imagine. And so we were trying to figure out who was running the Australian Rugby League that they borrowed money from. So we weren't coming up with many places. So I thought I'll go and look up their ABN, see if they had one. And that's how we got to this point. And then we started looking up some bloke who owned sheds. hang on.
And we've kind of worked out that, like, so the International Rugby League is an organization that was formed, but it's got this complex web, but like from its past, and it's just all very strange. Like, it's not as straightforward as it seems. And it's like, it's just weird. It's very weird that this is how International Rugby League is. Like, it's even weirder than I think you and me even suspected it to be. And how it all works, I don't really know. But, like, me and you were guessing that maybe it's possible that the International Rugby League was set up so that if it gets into dire financial trouble, it can be kind of cut away as an organization, and below it is still some sort of infrastructure that you've got the ability to start up a new company and, you know, go forward with a new company. But we weren't really sure. It's just very weird.
Yeah. And nothing in their financial reports is ever explained or understood or clear, and nothing's been explained in the past. So the report was, it was throwing up more questions than answers, which is never a good thing from a financial report.
No.
Not saying that they're withholding information. It's more the fact that because it's the first one that I've seen them produced publicly, you kind of want to go, well, hang on, how did we get to this point, and why is this money being borrowed, and who's that from, and what's it for? And you just want to know what's going on there.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's nothing explained. It's just like, oh yeah, this happened. If you ask them, no, it happened. Let's just move forward, shall we?
Yeah, it's a little bit strange. And like, we're not suggesting anything like terrible's going on or anything.
No.
It's just this weird complex web of like stuff, and it'd be cool if there it was, you know, and it doesn't really need to be explained if it works, but as just not as straightforward as we kind of thought it would be.
That's right. Like, you kind of, if there's been a chunk of money borrowed from the international body from specifically one nation's rugby league competition, the concern I've got is not so much about the money they've borrowed or what it's going to be used for or how much it is. It's more about, does that body that they've borrowed it from now have some sort of power or say or control over how the international body functions?
Mm.
That's a pretty major deal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and there's just things like that. So you want to know if the ARL, the thing that they've borrowed money from, is completely separate from the NRL, or whether it's got some sort of links to it, or whether it's just some other weird random thing, or whether it's just some bloke who sells sheds out in the middle of the bush.
Yeah.
It'd just be nice to know.
It could be like, dude, I was drunk one night, I registered the name. I don't even know anything about it.
Because I legit thought I was going to find an address out in New Penrith somewhere.
That would be funny, huh? Imagine if I, like, in some weird way, I ended up actually owning all of International Rugby League. The way you know I don't is that there are people that I would have fired a long time ago.
See, I'm thinking maybe that was just a front.
That would be pretty cool.
That's a pretty good front. You know what? I'll buy it, and then I'll put these incompetent people in charge, and then I'll just lambaste them the whole time, and no one will know it was me.
So it's all a... And it turns out that I'm actually a rugby union fan. And I'm trying to undermine International Rugby League to undermine the game one day.
One day. Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, your secret's out now.
Damn
it. Not just a rugby union fan, but you're a rugby union fan of everything Welsh.
I am Welsh. My name is actually Jones something. Jones. It'll be Jones. It's like Jones something. That's the
name. No, your name is actually Jones Jones.
It's Jones Jones. Oh, shit.
Your middle name is Dafydd.
Dafydd?
Yeah, D-A-F-F-Y-D-D.
Okay.
There you go. I've seen that sometimes from a few Welsh players in the past.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dafydd's a popular middle name.
It does come up from time to time.
It's like Dafydd, a couple of things that are popular in Wales, right? Unemployment. Mm-hmm. Middle name being Dafydd. Pot noodles.
Pot noodles. I didn't know pot noodles.
Yeah, pot noodles. Didn't you know that?
Nah, well, I've never been to Wales.
Yeah, neither have I.
So, pot noodles.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Is that their number one cuisine?
Should
I look this up?
It must be. Yeah, look up the most popular dish in Wales. It's probably
Welsh cuisine.
It's probably curry.
Welsh rare rabbit?
Really?
I'm sure. Did we look at this before? Was this something that we did on the podcast or something?
No, I don't think we have.
I remember going through some of this stuff before.
We've looked up what dolphin milk tastes like, but we haven't looked this up.
You sure? Because some of this looks familiar. I'll try this one. Top 10 foods to try in Wales.
Okay.
What do we got here? Number one, Welsh rare rabbit. Looks like they've got an egg on it.
Okay.
With avocado. That sounds delightful.
Yeah.
Glamorgan sausage.
All right.
That's what you have after dinner. Barra Brith.
I wonder what that is. Sounds like something you do out the back of a pub when you've had too many.
It's a traditional fruitcake.
Ah, there you go.
There you go. Number four, lamb caul, C-A-W-L.
That sounds more normal.
It's a soup with lamb and carrots and some other veggies in it.
If someone says like, oh, I'm cooking dinner, you go, oh, nice, what are you cooking? And they say, I'm making a soup. Don't you just want to beat them to death? Like,
just like, oh, you're just getting it out of a can, are you?
Yeah, it's like, what are you going to eat, though? It's a soup, isn't a fucking food. It's a drink.
It's a drink. Number five, Conwy mussels. And then, let me say, I'm absolutely certain I'm pronouncing all of these wrong.
That's all right.
So just for the Welsh fans who hate us, you can have something to laugh about here.
The thing about the way that Welsh people say things, it's irrelevant because no one cares. So we can just make it up as we go.
Leek.
Leek. Actually, this does sound familiar. I remember us making jokes about leeks.
Laver bread. Known as Welshman's caviar.
Oh, there
a
you
seaweed
go.
Dish that's often mixed with cockles.
A Welshman's caviar sounds like a fucking euphemism for something, quite honestly. It's like, nah, go to the next one.
Crempogs.
What are they?
Also known as Welsh cakes. They're a type of pancake.
Okay.
Made with buttermilk. They're thicker than normal pancakes.
All right.
Suwan and samphire.
What is that?
Seafood and shellfish.
Why don't they just say that then?
And the last one is salt marsh lamb.
It's a really salty lamb, I guess.
It actually doesn't look too bad, that one. Well, I found something I'll eat.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. I'll have the lamb.
I'll have the fat pancake.
That's dessert. And I'll pass on the leek and the soup, thanks. There we go. We've never got a reason to go to Wales.
Would you rather be known for those cuisines or meat pies like we are in Australia?
Hey, look, Valtteri Bottas was here and he's a fan of the meat pie.
Yeah.
We've won over someone from overseas.
Yeah, I saw it. Oh, by the way, I watched the entire Grand Prix. Did you watch it?
No, I was at work.
Okay. I watched the entire Grand Prix, and like Verstappen was out really early. Yeah. And it was really good. I enjoyed it. Like, not a huge amount happened, but I just really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was interesting. You got to see Verstappen's car shit itself.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a throwback to when his old man's car caught on fire in the pits. He did the same.
I was watching that race, when that happened.
That was back when, was it, Joss's car went into the pits and they didn't get the fuel hose connected properly, and the fuel spurted all over his car, and then it caught, ignited and blew up.
I think what happened was they were fueling his car, and then they went to disengage it, and it was sort of stuck for some reason. And then when they finally got it off, fuel sprayed, and it was like, oh, what the fuck? And then all of a sudden it goes into a fireball.
Actually, I don't know if I'm getting this mixed up with another car that had a similar incident. Did they also find that the fuel flow regulation thing on that hose was actually being tampered with to make the fuel flow faster, to make the pit stop quicker?
I don't know if it was that one. I remember there was one that was like that, but I don't know if it was that one in particular. Yeah,
but that was Joss's car. It blew up in flames while he was still in it. Yeah. And, Max's car, the right-hand rear brake was on fire. It was just driving into the pits. He just drove the fire to the pits.
He really did. And he's it looked like his the brake pad, which is made out of carbon fiber, exploded just as he was coming into the pits, which was really cool to see.
Yeah, just shit just flying all over the road.
Yeah. But the amount of heat in it was really kind of shocking. Like, they had some sort of failure. Later on there was a car that had an issue and it might have been the Red Bull, the Toro Rossos, whatever they call them these days. They come into the
Visa, Cash App, MasterCard, something else. It's a long one.
Yeah, it's one of those ones. They come into the pits and they had a smoking right rear, and it ended up being one of the tear offs that just got stuck in the duct, and that's all it was. It was just that burning because it was they were concerned about it. Which I thought was interesting.
Yes. What was the other one? Oh, yeah. So after Verstappen, all of the Lewis Hamilton fans were on Twitter laughing at Verstappen's car failing. And then two laps later or so, Hamilton's car did the same thing.
Yeah, that shat itself.
It's and really then they went and turned on Mercedes and abused them instead. I want to give a shout out to Carlos Sainz. I've had my appendix taken out. It took me 4 weeks to get back to work. And he's just taken 6 days to go and drive a car. Was it 6 days? No, 12 days.
I mean, that's crazy. It's crazy. 12 days from being operated onto that. That's insane. Yeah.
Just a bit of major abdominal surgery. Just walk in the park. I'll go drive around a car with 33 million Gs going around, pushing me around everywhere. It'll be fine.
Just the heat alone is, you would think that would get to him, but he did it. And he had a great race too. Like, he didn't put a foot wrong. It was fantastic.
Yeah, make sure they've got to take out of him next week, so make sure he wins the next one.
Yeah.
it was a pretty interesting race. It was good to see that this must be the first race in a long time where both the Mercedes failed to finish.
Yeah.
And also both the Haas cars managed to score points as well.
Did you see the stuff about Alonso?
Yeah, apparently they reckon he brake tested George Russell, and that's why Russell had his accident.
Yeah, they looked at his telemetry. Yeah. And they saw that, like, the way that he drove going into that corner was completely different compared to every other lap that he'd done. So, like, he backed off enough that he had to accelerate more to get to the corner.
Yeah, that's... So he argued that he was going to try a different line because he was still defending.
Mm.
And so he backed off, dropped down a gear, then it was too far back, so he then had to go up shift to accelerate back into the corner before braking again.
Mm.
He's like, yeah, I don't know, Fernando.
That's a bit of an interesting one.
So he got basically, what was it, a drive-through penalty in the pits, but it was after the race, so they added 20 seconds to his race.
Ah, okay. I didn't know what the penalty was, huh? Yeah.
And yeah, I think he got a point on his license, whatever it is.
Yeah, super license.
Yeah. I assume they've got like 9,000 points on them because everyone gets points on them all the time, but no one ever loses it. Pastor Maldonado never lost his, so you know.
Yeah, that's a good point. Oh, shit. That's a really good point. It's interesting that Alonso was very good in that race too, considering the equipment he's working with.
Yeah.
But it's interesting when you take Verstappen out of it, how interesting the races get.
So, that is true.
Yeah. But it was funny. I was thinking like going into the race, like, you know, you and me watched Jos Verstappen racing around. And he was a handy driver too, because he would have races every so often where he looked really good, but he just couldn't do it consistently, you know?
Yeah.
And then you think like his son like sort of dragged it all together. But I mean, the car has got a lot to do with it.
Oh, absolutely. That car is an absolute weapon of a thing.
Yeah.
It's insane. What were we talking about? Rugby league.
Yeah, we had a rugby league podcast at one point.
Oh, we're just touching on a new audience here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just had a look too. There's no race next week. It's 2 weeks away.
That'll be that's what they call a mid-season break now.
Basically, 2 weeks off. So, yeah, it's a good thing because there's footy to be played in between.
Yeah, yeah.
How many more days until we start talking about Origin in the mainstream media?
I think it's going to be after this round of games. And I'll tell you why. Because Cleary's out for a month, right? And Moses is out for 2 months. And so I think they'll start talking about who will be the halfback for New South Wales. And there's going to be talk about Nicho Hynes, but then it'll be like, oh, has he got the form and stuff like that? And who would be the next dude off the rank? And we'll find out. But I don't like hearing about Origin until about 3 days out from Origin.
I'm the same. I hate it. But you just know that the journos, and yeah, it's going to start with Matty Johns. It's going to start happening pretty soon.
Yeah. He'll be like, this random Newcastle player should be a lock for New South Wales.
Actually, who do you reckon he's going to drag out? Let's have a look. It'll be a Knights player. It'll be someone who hasn't played Origin before.
Well, what about Jack Cogger?
He's got a tendency to go for the younger players. So I reckon, what have we got here? Leo Thompson?
Possible.
Dylan Lucas? Ooh, Thomas Jenkins.
Yeah, it might be him, hey.
Because he's from Borough as well, so he's a country player.
Yeah.
He played for Penrith.
Yeah.
That always helps.
Yeah, they'll be it's got that Penrith connection as well.
That's right. See, you've already started getting it. Dylan Lucas, I believe he's only ever played low grades for Newcastle, but he's from the South Coast. Leo Thompson, we can't because he's a Kiwi. I just realised. So, yeah, Dylan Lucas or Thomas Jenkins. We'll see if Matty Johns wants to push them in there. Let's see how we go with that.
I just thought, you know what it'll be?
Mm-hmm.
Luke Brooks.
Ooh.
They'll start being like, you know what? Luke Brooks, he's playing the best footy of his career. He's been leading that Manly team around.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Can you imagine that? That would be pretty funny.
There's no Cleary. There's no Mitch Moses. Who's the other options?
Like, I was talking to Nadine about this today. I think that Cleary's probably going to come back and be there in time for the first Origin game.
Absolutely. Right? But we're talking hypothetically. What if they bring Origin forward by 8 weeks? Because they'll go, oh, you know, but Cleary will probably take a few weeks to get back to his best, whereas Luke Brooks is already at his best.
I just think the funny thing will be, like, when they've got all of these players for Penrith that are absolutely destroying the NRL, and then they'll be like, nah, let's pick dudes from other clubs. Like, would the Panthers, how would the Panthers go against Queensland? Would they do worse than what any of the fucking Brad Fittler teams did?
I think you'll find that an actual NRL team would perform better more often than not than a poorly performing state side would.
Mm.
So, you know, those average New South Wales Origin sides we have when Queensland were winning all those series in a row.
Yeah.
You could have put the best NRL team up against Queensland and probably would have had a much more better result because just of the cohesion that the team had.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's the reason why Queensland was so dominant. A lot of those players had played together all through Origin, all through Test footy, and a lot of them at club level as well. So the cohesion was already there. So that's my theory on it. I think you can't always just put the best players together and just expect it to work. You need that cohesion sometimes.
Because I was looking at the Panthers team, right, and I'm thinking about it. If you go, say you go Cleary, right, you go Isaiah Yeo, Appy, I don't know if Appy's retired. I don't think he's retired yet from the New South Wales lineup because you'd probably go Appy. But if not him, would you be like outraged if Mitch Kenny was named hooker? Like, I don't think you would.
Origin would probably suit his style a little bit better because of the intense just forward play through the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a reason why creative hookers never really made it on the Origin stage that much.
Hmm.
You know, you had to be more of a solid, consistent all-rounder than just someone who is a much better attacking player. Look, there's a reason why Robbie Farah didn't have the long career as a hooker for New South Wales as Cameron Smith did. Because Cameron Smith was just perfectly skilled all-round in every aspect of the game, whereas Farah was much more an attacking player. I would say he probably had, ball skill-wise, better skills than Cameron Smith, but that's the only skill he was better in Matt. Every other aspect of the game that you need to be good at as hooker, Smith towed him.
Yeah. But then on top of that, right, on top of those, so there's like three Penrith players that are, you know, spine players, right? If Dylan Edwards was named fullback, you probably wouldn't be outraged by that, right?
No, not at all.
Toto's going to be inside. He just is. And then if it was Talon May and Tungor in the centres, you wouldn't be outraged by that. And I'm just going through it. Like, I'm not saying they should all be selected, but I was just thinking, like, if you wanted to, like, how much of a downside would it be to pick as many of these? And they're in form. It's not like they're out of
form. I'll ask you, if the Penrith centres were picked for New South Wales, it'd probably be the first time we've gone with two actual starting centres who are actual centres.
Yeah, I'm trying.
I think that's why I was in quite a while because they've been picking fullbacks for the best part of the last, what, 3 or 4 years?
For forever, yeah.
It's been nuts. It'd be nice to see them just actually pick centres for a change.
Yeah. Having said that, if they picked Mitchell and Whiten in the centres, you go, would you go? Like,
not Whiten.
No, oh, no, I agree. I agree 100%.
Latrell, I think you can get him up for any game you want. You get him in the right structure and the right organisation and they're working in the right direction that works around him.
Yeah.
He will rise to the occasion.
Yeah, yeah.
Just that sort of player. Whiten, I'll be honest, never really, even at his best, never really got all of the hype.
I agree with you. I'm right there. I agree completely.
He's just, to me, he's just Josh Dugan.
Yeah, he's a bigger Josh Dugan.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that he's shit or that Dugan was shit. It's just that what they both had was very similar, and that is very, very strong ball running fullbacks. Like it would not be one of those jobs where one person could tackle them and just take them down. Such good leg drive. They'd power through nearly most tackles. They wouldn't have to run around you all the time. And had capable enough passing skills to be able to set up a trial. Like if they got a 2-on-1, they could execute that play, that sort of thing. That's about it.
Players you'd select if you haven't got any real centres.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's about it.
I just think it'd be interesting if, like, Michael Maguire, he looks at, I mean, he's not going to do what Brad Fittler did, like, because that was a disaster. But if he went the complete opposite way and said, like, I've got this club side that is full of New South Wales players and they're all in form, and if I picked every single one of these guys, I wouldn't get absolutely hammered for it. If he decides to do that, it'd be interesting to see how it would turn out. Like, I'd like to see it.
I think what we will see, I'm going to say this before any other journalist get on top of it, okay, is he is very big on combinations. Mm-hmm. And not just combinations between one or two players, between three players on one side of the field.
Mm.
So if he's looking for a left-edge combination, if he's going to go right, I'm definitely picking Luai. He's going to pick someone who spent a fair bit of time playing with Luai out there as well.
Mm.
That's what's going to happen. So you're going to find people might be a bit upset or a bit confused about it. You'll get two obvious, smart decisions that just go, yep, there, no worries. And then a third one will be joined into it and you're going, how does he get there? And you're going, he's played with him, knows the style. That's the Maguire thing. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's one or two roughies that come out. And I wouldn't be surprised if they are, I'm not saying the Penrith players are roughies, but in the minds of the journos.
Yeah, yeah.
You might get one or two roughies that are Penrith players who come into the side to join on whatever edge that Madge wants to work on in attack.
Well, if you think about it, if they go to day one of the New South Wales camp and it's like Cleary and Luai are the halves, you got Azeo there at lock, you got even Appy and Kenny with your thoughts that like Kenny maybe starts the game, exactly what Ivan Cleary used to do with them. Kenny starts the game and Appy comes off the bench after 20 minutes or so. Like straight away, your spine, you don't have to, you're not introducing anyone, you know?
No, that's right.
They, all of them know exactly what their job is. And if you go in and you get, say, the centres are, say, Tungor and Crichton, for instance, at the Bulldogs, once again, you're not introducing everyone. They all just slip straight into what they're doing. And I think that, so I wonder if he is thinking along those lines and we're going to find out. That's the cool thing. I just hope we don't end up getting what New South Wales normally does. And as you say, it's like, well, we've named 15 different fullbacks in the side, you know, and silly shit like that, because that doesn't work.
The only silly sounding thing that he might do is select someone who is a very, very good defender to play hooker for the first 25 minutes. So you can take him out of the hooking position and put Coruscant there for the rest of the game, but use that player he started with in the bench rotation for the forwards.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the only thing I can think of. And I'm not saying that he will do that, but that's the only thing I could think of that he might do, given I saw him do it a few times at the Tigers.
Yeah.
So, you know, like a player he'd like doing that with, for example, was Dean Halitau.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not him specifically, but players like him. So you get someone in there who can do a lot of defensive work and just get them doing passing off the deck from dummy half for the first 15, 20 minutes. That sort of player. That's kind of the thing that he'd want, because then you've got yourself a utility player, but they're on the field and they're defending the whole time. So they're being useful in that regard. Yeah. And that's, I hate to say it, I think that's kind of the role that someone like, not him actually, Dale Finucane is suitable for, because Finucane's not a great contributor in attack, but he's a very solid defender. And so that's the sort of person I'm thinking that he'd go for, something in that sort of mold.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many players are out there like that. Jaden Brayley would be perfect for it, but the poor bugger keeps getting injured.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is a hooker, but, you know, I don't know what he'll do there. I at this rate, I can't see Cook being in there.
No, I'm the same. I think that Cook is – I think it's maybe time to just move past Cook. And, like, look, with how good our Appy is playing, like, he's the first guy, and it's not even close. But – like with Mitch Kenny's defensive capabilities and just his the cohesion he has with all those Panthers players, and he is getting better as an attacking player actually. He's got to come into calculations, I would suggest, mostly because of his defense. Like his defense is fantastic, and yeah, I don't know. I just think that we might see a fucking lot of Panthers and former Panthers players in the New South Wales team, and I think it would be a really smart move. Like it'd be crazy to have this run from the Panthers, and you get to the point where you're like, oh yeah, they had this great team, but we only selected a couple of their players for New South Wales. If he's so dumb,
it would be. But anything's possible. We know that.
Anything is possible. That's very true.
All right. Well, we've given the Johns cartel a bit to think about there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And man, we've covered a fair bit of ground this episode.
We have. That's why we're the greatest podcast in the world. Like I'm willing to say it. I know you say it all the time when we're not recording, but I'll say it while we're recording.
Yeah, I will admit I am a bit of a bragger. I'm a genuine salesman. Yeah, I'm shit. Not that moment of truth. Thanks everyone for listening. Make sure you check us out on all the socials. Follow us and like us everywhere. Leave some comments for us so we can read them out. And we will catch us all next time.